The quest to feed a growing world population without destroying the soil, water, oceans and climate is a challenge that's occupying the mind of a US journalist, Joel Baum. He says despite advances in agricultural production, we're gradually using more food than we're producing. Joel Baum's new book is called The End of Plenty, The Race to Feed a Crowded World. I asked him about why the world is running out of food and his experience of working on farms in Australia and New Zealand when I spoke to him earlier via Skype from Wilmington, North Carolina. Joel Baum, you grew up in North Carolina. You write that you always wanted to be a farmer, that it was your destiny, yet it didn't happen. Why?
You know, when I got to NC State, where I was studying agriculture, I sort of took a left turn. I graduated in the middle of the farm crisis in the United States when grain prices from the Green Revolution had just, had caused grain prices to plummet. Some of the best farmers I knew in my county were going bankrupt. And I had taken journalism classes as sort of just as a kick. I couldn't really believe anyone would actually pay you to have that much fun. And so when my farming future looked bleak, I decided to try my hand at journalism and sort of never look back. And even though I don't farm, the farm has stayed in the family and I've always been very interested and involved in it.
When you were young, I'm curious to know, you worked on properties in Australia and New Zealand. Tell me a little bit about that.
I did. I actually, after college, I sold everything I had and joined an expedition called Operation Raleigh that took me on a sailboat, one of these old tall ships, from Hawaii to Sydney. And once I got to Sydney, I bought an old car. I think I paid about $500 for it and drove up to an area outside of Goondiwindi in Western Queensland and worked on a big station there. They were in need of a tractor driver. Somebody was going on vacation. So I worked for them for about a month, working with the sheep and the cattle and disking huge wheat fields. I eventually made my way to New Zealand, where I hitchhiked down to a little town called Tiamutu in the North Island. But worked with a guy on a dairy farm there for a week or two, just helping him milk his cows and vaccinate his sheep, and just to sort of get an idea of what agriculture was like in those areas. And I loved it. It was fantastic.
Classic Australian and New Zealand experiences there. You write in your book, that The End of Plenty, that the world is running out of food. Now, that's a pretty dramatic statement. What do you mean?
I mean, it's more in the chronic ways than in the sort of catastrophic ways we saw back in the food crisis of 2008 through 2012. But essentially what's happening is we're gradually using more food, whether through population growth or eating more meat or using it for biofuels, than we're actually producing. And what I'm talking about here are the three major food grains that produce the vast majority of the calories in the world, and that's maize or corn, wheat, and rice. Projections from the FAO and other agricultural experts say we're going to have to nearly double the production of these basic cereal grains in order to keep everyone fed by 2050. And yet with climate change coming down the pike, hampering yields and causing drought in places like Australia and Russia, it's going to be extremely hard to do.
It's interesting because agriculture has changed a lot over years. Crop yields have climbed, production rates always seem to be increasing. What's going wrong in this equation then?
Well, what's interesting is we had this huge run-up of food grains and huge production gains during the Green Revolution, where researchers like Norman Borlaug in the United States and researchers at the International Rice Research Institute in the Philippines created these amazing high-yielding varieties of rice and wheat that really transformed agriculture around the world. Now, Borlaug was lauded for his efforts and even won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970. And he predicted then that we have about 30 years to either make greater inroads or to get our population in check. And we've done neither. And right around 2000, 30 years after he predicted it, this massive yield growth started to flatten. And so now we've had several years now, almost a decade, where rice yields have virtually flatlined, as has wheat.
I'm wondering what you think about, you know, grain is used to feed cattle. It's also used to fuel cars. Is that wasted effort, if you like?
Well, certainly meat is a very expensive way to get our calories in terms of both, especially when we talk about cattle, in terms of both its water consumption and its grain consumption. But it's also, meat is also a very dense package of nutrients and protein that a lot of people in the world could stand to eat a little more of. Of course, here in the United States, I'm not sure in Europe, we eat far too much of it. Now, food-based biofuels, particularly the way they're done in the United States with corn, not much environmental benefit, very little economic benefit other than to the corn growers who are subsidized by this program. You know, right now we're taking 40% of the U.S. corn crop and turning it into fuel for our cars. And that's enough to feed everyone in Africa for a year.
There's a chapter in your book that caught my eye called The Blue Revolution. Now, Australia is a country with a huge coastline. Is aquaculture a new food production frontier?
Well, I love aquaculture. I think, you know, it's been one of the fastest growing food production systems since the 1970s. Unfortunately, most of that has been in Asia, where it has a long tradition, thousands of years old tradition in China particularly. And they are currently the Leviathan of aquaculture. But places like Australia and the United States, there's plenty of opportunity to do it and grow very efficient animal protein that's also quite healthy and good for you. The trick is doing it right. And as we've seen over the 80s, during the massive grow up of the salmon industry, or the shrimp industry, there were areas where it was not done right, where mangroves were taking down and where salmon pens were stocked way too full and were fraught with disease and escapement. Last year, I wrote a story for the National Geographic that looked at some very sustainable ways we could grow fish in ways that had very little impact on the environment. Shellfish, multitrophic systems. Even China is using sort of this fish rice thing that's coming back in vogue that's over several million hectares that's providing a number of ecological benefits as well as producing a lot of really good protein for people to eat.
Finally, Joel Bourne, you've been a journalist for a while now. You're not tempted to one day perhaps try to be a farmer?
You know, I think about it all the time, but, you know, it's like the Robert Frost poem. You know, I took that the road less traveled a long time ago. I'm not saying never. The farm is still in our family. My brother and I still manage it. But writing and journalism, as well as farming, as I think many of your listeners will know, are full-time occupations. And even though I love both, I think I'm going to have to stick with writing for a while. Oh. There are a lot better farmers out there than I am, that's for sure.
All right, Joel Bourne, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Oh, it's my great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And that was Joel Bourne speaking to me from North Carolina about his new book, The End of Plenty, The Race to Feed a Crowded World.